President Trump just told the UN General Assembly that multinational trade deals haven't helped the American middle class. This comes as Governor Bruce Rauner returns from an 8-day visit to China and Japan aimed at boosting Illinois business.
Japan and China are already strong economic partners for the people of Illinois. I have strong personal relationships with leaders in those countries.
That's Governor Rauner on WBBM. Today, he joins us to tell us how he sold Illinois to potential trade partners in Asia. And we'll hear from business leaders, especially in manufacturing and agriculture, about what they're hoping to see. Plus, the largest health insurer in Illinois is leaving the Obamacare exchange for small businesses. And as the future of healthcare continues to hang in the balance, both insurers and patients are wondering what happens next.
We're going to see the prices get approved, the plans get approved, see those disclosed. Will there be subsidies or not? I think that's a really big question, and there's not a lot of time left.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Every year, Illinois businesses sell billions of dollars worth of products overseas. It's everything from food to agriculture to industrial chemicals, machinery parts, lots of things made right here in Illinois. And at the same time, there's roughly 300,000 workers here employed by foreign-owned companies. That's according to the International Trade Administration. Last year, as a state, we imported more than $30 billion worth of goods from China. It's also, of course, one of our top export countries. Illinois ships nearly $5 billion worth of goods there. And as a state, we send about $2 billion worth of products to Japan. All of this helps explain why Governor Bruce Rauner traveled to China and Japan last week to recruit businesses and investors. The 8-day trade mission was Rauner's first since taking office. We're going to hear more about that trip and what he accomplished from the governor himself later on in this hour. But first, we thought we'd take a look at why doing business within Asia is so important for Illinois' economy. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with the Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Manufacturers Association about why foreign trade is so important for Illinois' economy. But first, I'm joined on the line by Paul Taylor. He's a corn, soybean, and specialty crop farmer in Esben in DeKalb County in northern Illinois. He's a former Illinois Corn Board member. Paul, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here. Good morning.
Thank you, Nyla. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I appreciate it. I know this can be a busy time of year for you right now, but can you remind us what you grow and how much of what you grow gets exported to other countries?
Well, like many traditional Midwestern farmers, I raise corn and soybeans. My soybeans all happen to be seed beans. And then I also raise vegetables, which are cannery vegetables, not retail, for Del Monte. So we're green peas, sweet corn, and lima beans.
So quite a bit. How much of that ends up overseas?
Well, you know, vegetables is an interesting one. I don't know how much that does, but I do know that they're very sensitive to that, particularly when we come to the topics of GMO, for example. They're very concerned about exporting those products to Europe. And so with the corn, thinking back to the fact that we've got these inland waterway systems, the Mississippi River, the Illinois River, we are just in a natural place for much of our grain. I think nearly half of our soybeans in the state of Illinois are exported, and corn is not that much, but it's significantly important for corn exports.
Paul, when you hear that Governor Rauner just got back from a trip to China and to China and Japan that was focused in part on promoting trade with Illinois, what do you want the governor to know about how trade policies affect you as a farmer?
Well, I think he already knows many things of the importance that you talked about. Some of those numbers, how many jobs are involved. Exports has always been one of those things that kind of up and down. It's driven by global markets, driven by the value of the dollar. It's driven by competition and weather in other parts of the world. So it's a really complex global equation, if you will. But we have to be players. We have to be consistent players. We have to provide a quality product. We have to be able to provide a consistent volume. And in many cases, particularly as you get into China, for example, they've used a different system of livestock production for a long time. And so we've been able to help them figure out how to better utilize their livestock to better rations, better dairy production, et cetera.
And from that, when you think about our government officials like Governor Rauner or President Trump, obviously, just speaking at the UN a couple, like just in the past hour, do you worry about what sort of our maybe more our national leaders will do, and if that will help you, that will hurt you more than, say, what the governor in Illinois can do, what the governor can do to help?
Well, because it's international trade, of course, and what many of these topics are driven by international negotiations, they're driven by trade treaties like the NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which President Trump decided to not pursue when he became elected. But most importantly, they're the ones that are really driving that. I think a couple things: when the president submitted his budget to Congress, USDA budget was cut considerably, and so were many other places. I understand that. One of the things that many farmers felt was a missed opportunity was funding that is typically piggybacked with grower checkoff funds in most cases to develop markets in other countries. China is a huge market for our soybeans. It's tremendously important. We share that market with the South American, Brazilian, and Argentinians. And we just heard within the last couple weeks that China has done a process to try to clean up their air, particularly in their urban areas, of using, including 10% ethanol as a policy. And that probably opens in the short term maybe some opportunities to export either more grain or more ethanol directly until they get their facilities up and going.
Right. And as you said, a lot of this is international. What do you hope state officials can do for you as an Illinois farmer?
Well, I think that, again, Illinois is in a great spot to do it. We've got Caterpillar. We've got others. They're great partners in the global marketplace. Terry Brand said his presence from Iowa in China is a great thing, just to promote the whole Midwestern part. But I think there's incentives clear down to infrastructure, how our roads work, how our systems of managing grain to export. Most of that's federal, but a lot of that depends on the state. And a lot of these are just, they can be deals, if you will, that help us get grain into Cuba, into China, into other places, especially markets that we're just beginning to get into.
That's Paul Taylor. I hope you're not getting too much rain today and your corn's drying out. I know this is a busy season for you. He farms in DeKalb in Esmond. Paul, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Tamara Nelson. She's a senior director of commodities at the Illinois Farm Bureau. Mark Densler is also with us. He's the vice president and chief operating officer at the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Tamara, Mark, welcome to the 21st. Thank you, both of us, for joining. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Nyla.
Thanks, Nyla. We appreciate it.
Tamara, let's start with you. You know, I wonder if you, Paul mentioned China was a huge market for soybeans. How big is that market exactly?
Sure. And actually, it was nice to hear Paul's voice. Paul went on both of Illinois Farm Bureau's trips to China in the last 15 years. We went twice, 8 years apart. So it's nice to hear he's still using all of that great information. In terms of Illinois agricultural product exports, just ag is about $1.8 billion to China. And for all of the ag and food and wood products and livestock exports to China are about $2.3 billion. So huge market in China for Illinois agriculture.
And Tamara, as you mentioned, you've participated in these international trade missions yourself, you and Paul, in the Illinois Farm Bureau. What actually happens on these trade missions?
Sure. What a great question. So typically when we started the trade trips, it was to expose our farmers to the actual market where the folks might be buying their product and to sort of assess how big is that market, are there any barriers to entry for Illinois or American products, and sometimes that might just be the form of cut of meat or the type of soybean or the protein levels in the corn. So we go on the surface to learn about that and to create a cadre of leaders that can then come back to the United States and to Illinois and to talk about the importance of foreign trade and of exports to farmers' bottom lines.
So on the flip side of that, Mark, for the Illinois Manufacturers Association, what kind of foreign investment do you see coming into Illinois?
Well, thanks for having me, Nyla, and being on the panel with Tamara this morning, because trade is absolutely critical to the manufacturing sector in addition to the agricultural sector. And you talk about building these relationships and the impact on Illinois. I think you referenced it. There are more than 50,000 Illinoisans that are employed today by companies who are headquartered in Japan and China. And so building these relationships both ways, creating markets for our products to move abroad, and then also attracting some of this foreign investment into the state of Illinois is vitally critical, particularly in the manufacturing sector. These are the good, high-paying, middle-class jobs that average about $80,000 a year in wages and benefits. So building these relationships is essential in developing trade between the countries.
And so, Mark, if I'm the CEO of a Japanese or Chinese company looking to set up manufacturing operations here in the U.S., what do you tell them? Why should I choose Illinois? We hear so much about taxes and competition with other states. What kind of things are what kind of relationship building happens on these trade missions?
You know, we have a great story to tell in Illinois. We certainly have our challenges that we've talked about before. But when you look at the strengths that Illinois has, our central location, we have a world-class city, we have a world-class airport. So the ease for company leaders to get in and out of the state of Illinois, access to fresh water, something that we were really talking about 10 or 20 years ago, an educated workforce, particularly for individuals that speak Chinese and Japanese. We're home to one of the largest Mandarin-speaking populations in the United States. And so that combined with our transportation system and our infrastructure makes Illinois very attractive for companies located outside the United States.
Right. And Mark and Tamara, Mark, maybe you can start and Tamara, you can follow up. We have heard concerns from foreign companies about the uncertainty when it comes to immigration policy in the U.S. Mark, do you see that as a big challenge moving forward?
You know, certainly immigration policy is talked about. We support immigration reform. Just when you talk about the manufacturing workforce very quickly, we employ about 570,000 workers. Half of those are going to retire in the next 10 to 15 years. So we have to create a pipeline at home, but immigration is part of that. And you look just that there's more than 13,000 Chinese students attending Illinois universities today and thousands more from Japan. And so having a strong immigration policy where we allow immigrants to come into this country and work in these facilities is absolutely critical for the manufacturing sector.
Tamara, what about for agriculture?
Sure, and I would echo that. I mean, Mark really hit the ball out of the park, and the Farm Bureau also supports, you know, a comprehensive reform of the immigration policies. Where it really affects farmers is in some of the seasonal jobs, and we simply cannot find workers that are interested in doing things like picking peaches or pulling weeds or milking cows, and it's difficult work, and it is something that folks from other countries are exceptionally good at. And also in the food processing sector, there's a lot of pork and beef processing in this state, and so we rely on the ranks of recent immigrants and sometimes specialized workers to come in from time to time and help us add value to those Illinois egg products so that we can create jobs here at home in Illinois.
We haven't talked about Illinois' budget situation. We've just talked about immigration. Tamara, was there anything in particular that you hope Governor Rauner would address in China and Japan? Like what most important things you wanted to hear him say while he was there?
I think that, you know, I think one of the most important things is that he went to China and Japan and just showing that Illinois has a commitment to our customers there and to the relationships that many of us have developed over the past 20 years. And just by the virtue of that fact and he him going to represent Illinois, that's been terrific. And I think also demonstrating that, you know, Illinois is a state where businesses can come and make investments and join us in producing products to sell here and in worldwide, I think that's all terrific. And I would not say that I would have heard or listened for anything more specific than that. So we're just delighted that he made the effort, and we look forward to many more.
Mark, from a manufacturing standpoint, what highlights would you or did you expect Governor Rauner to hit? What do we need to sell for getting more foreign investment into our state from China and Japan on the manufacturing front?
You know, I think talking about the assets that we do have, the large Asian-speaking population here, again, the access to water, the infrastructure, and really talking about our deep roots, I don't think people realize that Illinois was the first state in the country to open a trade office in China back in 1974, and our trade office in Japan opened in 1983. So Illinois really was at the forefront of establishing trade offices and working with businesses in these countries and have done so for decades. And so strengthening those relationships, talking about the assets that we have currently in the state of Illinois, talking about what the governor's trying to do to improve the business climate. There's no doubt we have challenges in the state of Illinois, and as you indicated, you know, companies worry about that a little bit. And so I think assuring businesses across the world that Illinois is open for business, and we're looking to partner with them, and we have a great workforce here, and we certainly have many opportunities for companies that want to locate in Illinois.
That's Mark Densler, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer with the Illinois Manufacturers Association. I want to thank Tamara Nelson as well. She's the Senior Director of Commodities at the Illinois Farm Bureau for joining us to talk about this trade mission, Governor Rauner's first trade mission that he's taken since he's been in office to China and Japan last week. Thanks both of you for helping kind of underscore a little bit more about the importance of the Asian economy to Illinois. Quick question for you, Tamara, for agriculture, how important is Asia for our farmers?
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, it is the region of the world where you have the most rapidly growing populations, and you also have the most rapid economic development, where people go from making $1 a day to $3 a day. And when they do that, they aren't able to jump right out and buy a car or a cell phone or even a Hollywood movie, but they can improve their diets. And so it is the biggest potential market
for you. Yeah. Thanks so much. Thanks to you, Mark. Thanks, George, for joining us as well. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st and listening. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the role and importance of international trade to people here in Illinois, a state that every year sends billions of dollars worth of farm goods, other manufacturing products to its foreign trade partners, while at the same time getting billions in return through foreign investment. All of this explains why Governor Rauner just spent 8 days in his first international trade mission through Asia last week to recruit businesses and investors. He made stops in China, a top destination for Illinois exports, and Japan, one of the state's leading foreign investors. As we've been hearing about from the Illinois Farm Bureau, from the Illinois Manufacturers Association, as well as from a corn and soybean farmer in DeKalb. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Governor Bruce Rauner. He's going to be talking about this first international trade mission he went on. On the phone with us now from Chicago is Laura Ortega. She serves as Executive Director of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce's International Business Council. Laura, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you, Nyla, for having me.
You know, we just heard Tamara and Mark talking about international trade and agriculture and manufacturing specifically. I wonder if you can go a little bigger picture for us and look at Illinois businesses overall. How globalized is Illinois' economy compared to other states?
Well, we are one of the most diverse and globalized economies in the U.S., highly engaged and dependent on two-way trade and investment. Just to give you a number, 1.7 million jobs are directly supported by international trade, which is roughly more than one in five jobs, or 23% of total jobs in the state of Illinois. We are the largest exporter in the Midwest, the fifth in the country in 41 industries. Exports are basically about between 8 and 10% of our GDP, and exports are the fastest growing segment of the Illinois economy, with I think over 23,000 companies, most of them. 90% of them being small and medium-sized companies exporting right now. So is the international trade is essential to our economic growth.
And Laura, when we hear that and we hear those statistics and you explain sort of how important that is to our overall economy throughout the state, I want to bring it back to Paul, the farmer we spoke to in the beginning, talking about how much national and international forces play a role, obviously, in these trade deals. And I wonder how folks like you at the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, people at the state level, how concerned are you about the Trump administration's positions on trade, his initial statements suggesting a pretty isolationist agenda? We heard a little bit more of the America First policy this morning in his address to the UN. How concerned are you about that?
Well, our members, or the majority of the members that I engage in my job at the International Business Council, definitely understand how important trade is, how important trade agreements are, and because they provide the necessary market access that in some other cases it would be very difficult to attain, and also provide a stable and secure framework for them to make the necessary, investment and decisions that they have to do in order to expand internationally. So they definitely, are for exploring opportunities to, in some cases, upgrade those agreements, those trade agreements. But definitely, they are definitely supporting anything that any policies that open markets and create a level playing field for our companies when they go abroad and do business abroad.
And that said, then, how do states position themselves? How do you think state-led, governor-led trips to foreign trade partners, what's the message now in what it sounds like you're describing is a little bit of instability, I guess. It sort of sounds like you're in a position right now of trying to reassure people, but we're certainly in a period of uncertainty when we look at what's going to happen. Certainly President Trump, through an executive order in January, said that we would be withdrawing from the TPP, even though that hadn't been ratified. We've heard lots of conversations about NAFTA. What role do states play in all of this?
Well, I think the instability, I think, is worldwide. It's not necessarily local. It had to do with, some geopolitical situations or macroeconomic situations that they are playing at the right now. And obviously, this kind of trips are extremely helpful to showing the interest of our state and international trade that this is a priority, that we are open for business, outbound and inbound, and that, at the end of the day, trade is about relationships. And it's about, through the relationships, creating a framework of trust and understanding that allows companies to build global businesses. You have expansions that usually come with tremendous challenge, cultural, legal, economics, and these treats provide for the role of public diplomacy is phenomenal, and economic diplomacy is phenomenal in here because it creates that kind of understanding at an official level that that procure the opportunities for our companies in a safe and structure or framework.
The governor could have gone anywhere. Why do you think he picked China and Japan as the two countries to visit as part of his first international trade mission?
Well, Japan is our second top foreign direct investment in Illinois, with about 348 different entities and supporting directly about 60,000 jobs here in Illinois. Japan is also our seventh largest export market. So the opportunities and the affinities between are and the relationship between Illinois and Japan are tremendous, and you know, this is a long term relationship. So that is one. And then in China, the China opportunity is phenomenal. We're talking about a consumer market that it is the world largest, with 300 million people joining the middle class, and with
sounds like huge
that is changing.
Sure, huge opportunities for us. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Laura Ortega.
Thank you.
With the International Business Council, executive director of that for the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. You know, as we've been talking about Governor Rauner on this first international trade mission since taking office, he's joining us now on the line from Chicago. Governor Rauner, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Nyla. It's great to join you. Thank you.
So why, we were just hearing about China and Japan. We've been talking all this hour about how important this is. You called the trip extremely successful. Governor Rauner, how do you measure success with these trade missions?
It's about making strong, positive connections with job creators. So this is, the mission is all about creating more economic opportunity across the entire state of Illinois. And Japanese companies, Japanese investors are huge partners already for the people of Illinois. There are more than 630 Japanese companies invested in Illinois, and they employ roughly 50,000 Illinoisans. And we met with dozens more Japanese companies who would like to come to Illinois. And as well, we met with some companies who already have operations who are interested in expanding in Illinois. We had some great conversations, a lot of follow-up to do. We've got an opportunity to have a number of new plant openings and expansions and create more good-paying jobs for the people in Illinois. And then we went over to China after that. China has roughly 62 companies, so they're quite a bit smaller in Illinois than Japanese firms because they're so much more recent. China only started investing in Illinois in recent years. That said, China is the fastest-growing source of foreign direct investment in America, and Chinese companies have a huge interest in coming to Illinois and investing here. And we had a meeting set up with many Chinese companies, both by the Bank of China as well as by the China Investment Corporation. They introduced us to dozens and dozens of businesses, and we had some terrific first meetings and a lot of follow-up to do. So we came away very excited, a lot of good job prospects from the trip.
Right. And Governor Rauner, of course, your role here is always top cheerleader, right, to speak for Illinois. I wonder how on your trip you did that when we've heard so much of your message the past 2 years with the budget standoff being how broken a state we're in and how hard it is for the state, for businesses in particular. Did that come up? Did people worry about Illinois' budget situation and how stable the state was? Did you hear that from leaders in China and Japan?
Well, we did hear that. It's not surprising. From the companies who are already here or know Illinois well, they brought up the issues that I, as governor, have been trying to address. A number of companies brought up the high property tax burden, especially in the metropolitan Chicago area, although in other parts of the state as well, Rockford, et cetera. High property taxes, big worry. Number two, a lot of concern about just the regulatory climate. You know, we have twice as many business regulations as the states around us in the Midwest. The red tape and restrictions raise the cost of business and reduce competitiveness. So we heard a number of concerns about that. And then also just concerns about the tax climate, the tax code, how complicated it is, how high our taxes are, and how even though taxes were raised over my veto in June, we still are running a $1.7 billion budget deficit. I mean, and the business owners who know that, they're concerned, as they should be. And I walked them through what we're doing, what I'm trying to do as governor to change that and fix it. And they were quite excited. They were very pleased with the efforts we have underway to shrink the cost of bureaucracy, to bring about a property tax freeze and local control on property taxes through a referendum, and to bring more financial discipline to the state. And they're cheering us on. We had a lot of enthusiasm when I walked through what we're trying to accomplish with our goals for the state. And then I emphasized the importance of investing for the long term and thinking of 20, 30, 40 years out how I think that way as a businessman before I became governor, how they should be thinking. And they strongly agreed with me, all the leaders, business leaders I talked to. And the fact that we have a great workforce, highly educated, well-trained, very productive workforce, best in America, the best location of any state in America, the heart of America, with our transportation network to access American markets, a world-class airport in O'Hare Airport that's a gateway for major commercial
travel. Sure. Yeah,
Asia.
And Governor Rauner, when you say that, I wonder also about when we think about the airport and all of our infrastructure, we also know that it's not just foreign companies that are looking for workers and are our workers here. They're bringing in workers. We heard Mark Densler from the Illinois Manufacturers Association and the Illinois Farm Bureaus as well talking about concerns about President Trump's immigration policy changes, how that affects everything from students at the University of Illinois to the ability to have manufacturing workers here. Did you hear about worries from the Trump administration and changes to immigration during your trip?
Not so much about that from the companies that we were meeting with over there. I think all of us know that immigration policy in America is really pretty broken. I mean, it's not really working on any level for anybody. We make legal immigration almost impossible, and bringing in skilled workers, trained workers, highly educated folks, almost impossible, and it's holding back the development of many companies. But then we leave illegal immigration easy, that causes challenges, especially for less skilled workers, and it can push up unemployment. So we have a tough dynamic, and I've been calling on Congress to undertake comprehensive immigration reform since I started to pursue public service on behalf of the people of Illinois, and I hope Congress will take it up. It shouldn't be done at the local level. It shouldn't be done state by state. It should be done by Congress on a comprehensive basis.
Governor, I know your time is limited. I just want to ask you two more quick questions. The other big economic news for the state, I know you've been working with Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel to bring Amazon's second headquarters here. In fact, there's a team from Illinois and the city of Chicago is in Seattle today to get a better idea of what Amazon's looking for. What's on the table at this point for recruiting Amazon here to Illinois?
Well, we are selling Illinois very, very aggressively, and we think we've got a great opportunity with Amazon. They're looking for the great airport like we have at O'Hare. They're looking for the highly skilled workforce like we have here in Illinois. They're looking for a very large, diverse urban environment that's fun and dynamic and with a lot of amenities and quality of life like the metropolitan Chicago area has. And they love the transportation network and infrastructure. And my team and our administration has already been working closely with Amazon for the two and a half years I've been governor. And we've brought them here to expand 8 major distribution centers. They're employing over 7,000 Illinoisans and growing that right now. We've helped them do that the last 2 years. So we've got great working relationships with them. They already love Illinois. And
do you help out the idea of tax incentives, Governor? Or is that on the table?
Oh, we will certainly be talking about what the incentives we need to be competitive. And I was pleased to sign the EDGE tax credit extension bill yesterday so we can offer EDGE tax credits, which most states do offer, so we can be competitive on that. Hopefully we don't have to be so much focused on tax special deals, because I'm not a big fan of that. What we've got to sell is the quality of our workforce, the quality of life, our transportation network, our education system, second to none, and really compete on that. We'll stand up well against any state with what we have to offer in those regards.
Really quickly, Governor, we just heard some reports this morning that you hadn't made up your mind on whether or not you're going to veto the abortion funding bill, HB 40, if it reaches your desk. Have you decided one way or the other?
No. That bill hasn't even been sent to my desk. They're playing political games with it. I don't really have any comment on that. We'll talk about it at the appropriate time.
When it reaches your desk. Okay. Thanks so much for joining us, Governor Rauner, to speak about the trade mission and economic opportunities for Illinois. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Nyla. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Listening to the 21st, I'm Nyla Boodoo. Small businesses in Illinois have been hit with some big news related to healthcare recently. The state's largest insurer on the Obamacare exchange, that's Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, just announced they're leaving the online marketplace for small businesses. To help us learn more, I'm joined on the line now by Kristen Shore. She's a healthcare reporter for Crane Chicago Business. Kristen, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
What's behind Blue Cross Blue Shield deciding to leave the marketplace for small businesses?
Right. So there are two avenues for healthcare.gov where people can either, individuals can buy an insurance plan for themselves or small businesses can buy an insurance plan for their workers. SHOP really never took off nationwide or in Illinois in particular. Blue Cross is the largest insurer in the state by far, and they were one of the few who have been on SHOP. They told me that this just wasn't an effective way for them to offer employers choice, that essentially the same plans that they offer on the SHOP exchange, small business owners can buy off the exchange at the same rates. One of the things that small business owners have told me over the years is that they never gravitated toward SHOP because it was really confusing and complex. I mean, this is a world that's very used to working with brokers. They don't have time to take to understand the nuances of health insurance, and so they've really relied on those relationships with brokers to walk them through that, to pick the right plan for the right price for them. So SHOP really never took off, and Blue Cross leaving SHOP, I mean, I think it's a big deal. Obviously, it's the biggest insurer in the state, but at the same time, there's been very little enrollment.
And so SHOP is Small Business Health Options Program, or SHOP, and you've explained a little bit about what that makes a lot of sense for brokers. Is this happening all over the country, or was this particularly hard in Illinois for this exchange to take off?
No, I mean, in Illinois, I can give you some numbers. So, for example, but it is a nationwide issue as well. So, in Illinois, as of January, there were 738 businesses covering about 3,500 workers with a plan through SHOP. So, 3,500 people. I mean, we've all been listening to the news and writing about the news of how Amazon's going to have potentially 50,000 jobs in its second headquarters, potentially in Chicago. And here we have only 3,500 people covered by a plan in the entire state via SHOP. So pretty small numbers for Illinois. Nationally, you can pull up some of those numbers for you. There were estimates originally that about 4 million people nationwide would enroll in coverage through SHOP, and in reality, less than 6% enrolled. So these are pretty small numbers. In Illinois, we only had very few to begin with in terms of insurers actually selling plans on SHOP. Now with Blue Cross leaving, we're down to one, which is Health Alliance, which is based downstate in Urbana. So they will be selling plans for SHOP.
So does that mean on the exchange that because there's only that one option, Health Alliance could raise their prices? Or does it sound like it seems like there's such a big market off the exchange with these brokers that prices would still be pretty competitive for small businesses? It may not make a big difference with insurance, I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. But back in August when we saw proposed rates, disclosed for the exchange for both individual consumers and for small business owners, Health Alliance actually did propose to increase prices by 72% on an HMO plan for small businesses. So an HMO plan is a narrow network plan. It essentially has a cheaper premium than a broad PPO plan, and based on that, you get discounts by seeing just a select number of doctors and hospitals. So, I mean, just because there is only one plan in the exchange doesn't mean that they don't want to hike prices, or at least they would try to, and they have to get federal government's permission.
So if you work at or for, if you work at a small business or if you worry, if you're a small business owner, do you think that rates might increase?
I mean, I think that's definitely a possibility. And actually, I should back up and say the federal government technically doesn't have to approve these rates. They only have insurers if they want to increase a price by at least 10%. The federal government requires that insurers essentially make that public. But there is no sort of law or teeth in any way for them to say, no, you cannot increase rates that much.
I'm speaking with Kristen Shore. She covers healthcare for Crane Chicago Business. We've been talking about small businesses in the Obamacare exchange. Kristen, I wonder if we can shift gears and talk about the online marketplace for individuals and what we see. So you were saying 3,500 people were using it for small businesses. There's more than 350,000 people enrolled with Obamacare on an individual basis in Illinois. And is that the vast majority of those, again, are also Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, right, Kristen?
They do have a sizable chunk of that, yes.
And so last month, we saw the news that insurers want to raise those rates yet again. How big of a hike are we looking at for 2018 with insurers for individuals on the healthcare exchange in Illinois?
Mm-hmm, sure. So on average, the highest rate increase proposed for plans to be sold to consumers is on average 43%. Just circling back to small business real quick, on average, that's nearly 47%. But back to the individual rates, so I can give you some more numbers if you'd like, just in terms of how the insurers are breaking this down. So, for example, Blue Cross would like to raise premium prices on four types of products with a range of an average 5 to 38%.
Wow, wait, stop. Did you just say 38%? That's a huge increase. Wow. Okay.
Right. And then for Cigna, which is another insurer that wants to sell on the exchange, they'd like to raise prices on average 38%. So that's an average, but their true range, though, is 17 to 162%.
And again, you said the important thing is you said they'd like to raise rates. How does that happen? How much can they raise rates, and who regulates that?
Well, they essentially have to get a permission from the federal government to sell plans on the online exchange. So the federal government has to say the plans that you plan to sell, so the networks of doctors and hospitals that you have available, that people would buy a plan and that would be what they would have to go and get treatment to. Basically, they have to say, yes, this meets all the qualifications. But in terms of the rates, the federal government, they don't exactly have the power to say you cannot hike prices by X amount. They only can say you have to make them public if you want to raise them by at least 10%, which is why we've seen, you know, some pretty big increases in this country. When you think about the cost of insurance on the exchange, well, it represents a small portion of people in Illinois, for example, since a lot of people still generally get their insurance through work. You know, for people who are on the exchange, this can be some pretty big increases. With that said, a very large chunk of people also get a subsidy from the government to help pay for plans. But when you think about that, add that to the mix, there's a lot of anxiety right now about if those subsidies are going to stay in play, because Republican lawmakers in D.C., you know, talked about wanting to get rid of those subsidies.
Well, and that brings me to my last question for you, Kristen. And certainly when we hear about these proposed rate increases, that has been something, these are proposals, that's something certainly critics of the current healthcare system have said, that it's too expensive, premiums are too high for people. I wonder where we're at with Congress and the ACA and Obamacare. Of course, we had that very dramatic midnight vote before the Senate recessed in August, where any changes failed in the Senate. Is there any sense that this is going to be taken up again in this current session?
You know, I think we all just kind of have to wait and see. I feel like, you know, I feel like it's quieted down a bit than before. It seemed like every single day we were hearing something new that was going to come up. I think a lot of people are in a wait and see mode within the next few months, because the insurance exchanges begin again on November 1. We're going to see the prices get approved, the plans get approved, see those disclosed. Will there be subsidies or not? I mean, I think that's a really big question, and there's not a lot of time left. What is it, about 6 weeks or so. So I think everyone's just kind of waiting to see what happens.
And so when you say there's not a lot of time left, 6 weeks or so, what do you mean by that?
Well, the insurance exchanges open again for enrollment on November 1st. And so if people are going to be buying plans on the exchange, they're going to want to know if they're going to get a subsidy to help pay for that plan. And that doesn't leave a lot of time for people to figure that out, because if they don't get a subsidy, they might not be able to afford a plan on the exchange. So then can they actually afford insurance in the private market? So there are there's just a lot of anxiety right now about that. So when you think about just a person trying to be able to afford insurance, on the other end, the insurance companies are anxious too, because if those subsidies go away, the thinking is from experts that the insurance companies might have to increase premiums to cover higher medical costs. So there's anxiety all around.
And so right now, as it stands, it sounds like what you're saying is right now, the way it stands is people who did receive subsidies maybe a year ago will not get them this year?
No, I mean, right now, nothing has changed at the moment, but there's a lot of discussion in D.C. about taking away these subsidies.
Right.
So for many people who are buying plans in the exchange, that would be a huge deal.
But they couldn't take, right. But Kristen, they couldn't take away subsidies like retroactively. Like imagine if like for a calendar year, they would have a subsidy for a year, right? Like even if they change the law in November, would that affect people next year?
Well, I don't know exactly how. I mean, it just depends on what they decide to do. But if they're going to get rid of the subsidies for plans that you're buying beginning on November 1, those plans are effective on January 1st.
I see. Okay.
So, right. So
that
they would be for 2018.
Okay. So that's the element of confusion there. And in terms of discussion about subsidies, again, right now, though, it just sort of seems like a lot of that talk has quieted down in terms of, I know, obviously, no one, especially with this past year, no one's going to be in the game of predicting outcomes. But does it seem pretty unlikely to you that something will happen before November based on what you've heard?
I think it's just everything's up in the air. Some days you hear a lot more than others. Sometimes things really pick up and there's a lot of activity, and then sometimes something else comes up. I mean, obviously, you know, there's just a lot of different things on the radar of this administration and this Congress. So I really think it's anybody's guess.
What you've said, given all of this uncertainty, everything we've talked about with rising rates, possible cuts to subsidies, do we expect to see a decline in enrollment in people on the exchange for 2018?
I mean, I think that's a great question. I think a lot of people are waiting to see. I think that if the subsidies are stripped, I think that that would impact people's ability to be able to afford a plan on the exchange. So in that sense, we could see some decline in enrollment. But if the subsidies are in place, depending on what kind of prices we see, we could see an increase in enrollment. So I think it really just depends on the next 6 weeks, what kind of activity we're going to be seeing coming out of D.C.
And I guess then that leaves not just, you know, we started talking about small businesses. We've talked about individuals. You mentioned hospitals and healthcare administrators. I guess, is everybody just in limbo right now trying to figure out, everybody's just sort of in a period of they don't really know what to do?
Yes, everybody is in limbo. The anxiety is felt across the entire healthcare industry. So, I mean, if you have people just speaking more generally about health insurance, one of the big things that hospitals are dealing with now are people who have high deductible plans. And so while they are insured, that doesn't mean that they can afford the deductible for the plan they have. So a lot of patients are starting to skip out on their bills. So yes, while they have insurance, and they're going to the hospital or they're just going to their primary care doc to get a checkup, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're paying those bills. So that's one of the frustrations that hospitals and doctors are dealing with on that end when it comes to health insurance.
Yeah, just a lot of uncertainty. Well, thank you so much for explaining some of this. I know it can get really complicated, and I appreciate you taking the time to explain this to us. Kristen Schorsch is a healthcare reporter for Crane Chicago Business. We will tweet out the links to some of her writing if you're interested in reading a little bit more about this. Kristen, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
The That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you have Alexa, we're easy to find. Tell her, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, every other way to contact us. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, follow us on social media, it's all on our website, 21stshow.org. If you follow us on Twitter, by the way, our handle is 21stshow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. If you search for us on Facebook, search for The 21st to like us. You can also comment on what we're working on, or you can post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.